Discussions with Ajahn Suchin in Bangkok and Gangajan, January 2012. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Phil, Jessica, Sarah, Robert, Suchin, Jonathan, and other friends.
We were just having a spirited discussion here earlier.
Yeah, recently John and Sarah sort of said, well, there's no real difference whatever one's doing. If one's trying to have understanding, if one thinks discussing Dharma is going to give you understanding, if reading an every Dharma book is going to give you understanding, or chanting scriptures, or memorizing the Tipitaka, or standing on one leg for 5 years, whatever. And I showed a picture of a guy in India who for 32 years he's held his hand up in the air by the river Ganges. He's a sadhu. He thinks that's the path. And they're saying, if one really thinks it's the activity, the outward activity, that's going to give you the path, that's going to develop understanding, then one's got the wrong attitude and the wrong understanding from the beginning. And I was trying to say, well, I think some activities are really wrong, but other activities are
less wrong.
Not wrong, maybe.
So the question is?
So the question is, who is right?
It depends on right now, at this very moment. Mm-hmm. No matter what brings understanding of reality right now, it's right.
Okay. Is any activity useful?
It doesn't matter, because now reality appears, mm-hmm. but it depends on how much one understands it as not self. One by one, each one. Like seeing now. Is there any glimpse of understanding that it is a reality? One reality in the circle of birth and death, sansarvata. Nothing is missing, otherwise that's the end of sansarvata. But there is no understanding of anyone, no matter one stands 5 hours, 5 years, or 1 hour. Or 1 minute. It depends on right understanding only.
Would someone with right understanding think that standing on one leg
is... Of what? Right understanding of standing one leg or what? With one leg.
Just right understanding of what is
now,
right of the past.
Reality right now. What reality is the object of understanding right now? How come to have such understanding? It cannot just arise by itself without any conditions, out of the blue. No.
So what are the conditions?
Without the teachings, who can understand reality right now? If anyone can, is it not the underestimation of the right understanding of the virtuous Buddha?
So why don't people who listen to true Dharma or study Abhidharma say, so many of them don't seem to get right understanding?
It depends on what one understands by the term Abhidharma. Why Dhamma is Abhidharma? Is Abhidharma different from Dhamma? Or is just the qualification or quality of Dhamma?
Just the qualification.
Mm-hmm. And I think the point that we were trying to make is if one reads the Abhidharma, even in Pali, if there's no understanding at all, then it's useless, just like standing on one's leg or going to a meditation retreat or anything else, because there's no understanding.
It not understanding even the word Abhidharma.
So, John, what you're saying is that the point of studying is to understand the reality, and it's therefore useless to talk in terms of one activity being better than another, one more wrong, one right.
Can anyone say Abhidharma without any understanding at all?
Yes.
So, is that the understanding of Dhamma?
No.
So, what is the use of not understanding, but just saying Abhidharma? Say. Mm-hmm.
So, Kim, if your friend said, oh, I'm going off to the jungle to meditate for the rest of my life, what would you say to him?
Of course, course, me being me, I will have a go at saying how wrong it is. But I don't think it's useful just saying that. The only right approach is to point to realities.
Can we say that from birth to death, we speak that which we do not understand at all? Until there is the understanding of reality right now. Without having heard the teaching, it's impossible for anyone to understand reality as it is. For example, what is forest? See, we just talk about it.
A place with lots of trees.
And what's tree?
The point is, I think, that whether in the forest or here, still seeing, still hearing, still like, dislike, so it comes back to the understanding at this moment. So if someone says they're going off to the forest, okay, there can be understanding, just like now. So it's not a matter of saying, go there or don't go there, or read the Abhidhamma or don't read the Abhidhamma. It's a matter of understanding reality now, at each moment, rather than saying these are the activities one should follow. Because the more understanding, the less it matters where one goes or what the activity is, whether one's standing on one leg or not.
Okay. I sometimes feel like that here or on DSG, you might say to the guy who's saying, right, I'm going to live in the forest, you typically will say what you just said, but you would also say you can just understand wherever you are, why do you want to go to the forest?
I do actually stress a lot, even to those people. It's about seeing now, hearing now. It's not about reading Vatana. It's not about understanding Pali.
So
it
anything that takes you away
from this moment is wrong.
Is it agreed, Ajahn? Even studying Patana?
What's the point of studying?
To understand the moment.
Right? So, if we are talking about seeing and you think a lot about forest, no way to come back to understand seeing right now.
Okay.
Talking about understanding words, I've been reflecting quite a lot about karma recently, partly because a close friend had a bad accident and is in a coma and so on. But actually, we talk a lot about karma, but if there's no understanding of realities at this moment, if there's no understanding of seeing and hearing now as a result of karma, then actually on a conventional level, when we say someone's had an accident or experienced the floods or something as a result of karma, it doesn't actually make any sense at all. Sometimes you say, well, this is just understanding karma on a conventional level. But I wonder if there's any value in it at all, because it seems that really to understand karma or vipaka, there has to just be the understanding of realities now, no person who experiences any result, just moments.
It depends on the listener. If they cannot understand reality at all, what about understanding the cause and the effect?
Okay. Mm. So it just depends on the degree of understanding. Mm-hmm. But actually, it doesn't make any sense unless there is an understanding of realities. For example, people think that bad things happen because of others' bad deeds or the weather conditions or the politicians or something, but actually it's only when one understands more about dharmas, kusala, kusala, and the vipaka, cittas now, that actually karma makes any sense. So anything else seems quite meaningless.
That person still does not know Buddha at all.
So when we talk about how before the Buddha's time people might have understood karma just on conventional level, actually it's not really any understanding of karma, because there's no understanding of paramattha dharmas.
But one cannot know the accumulation of anyone at all.
Well, I would think that maybe the understanding, maybe not about paramattha dhammas, but as the Chan was saying, it's acknowledging the cause and effect. So you may not be able to distinguish moments of karma from vipaka and know which is cause and which is result. But there is some acceptance, you know.
I have one or two questions that friends asked about before. For example, one American friend said that with regard to the belief in the effects of karma as well, that a good or evil thought or action will have consequences in future vipaka, I understand the concept but have a hard time fully subscribing to this as it's difficult to observe. Do you have any comment?
That person does not understand the accumulation of kilesa and the accumulation of karma. Just like coffee, can you bring any result with vipaka?
Bring any result? Coffee?
But it accumulates the taste of coffee.
Oh. So the more we drink coffee, the more we'll like it.
Yeah.
I find that to be true.
Yeah. Little by little, one moment to another
moment.
This is
jina karma, habitual karma that accumulates and so that eventually it can bring its results.
But whenever vipaka arises, it's from kamma, paccaya, and upanisya paccaya, both.
And another question that a friend finds difficult is usually, for example, when we read about paticca samuppada or when we talk about karma, it is with regard to bringing results in future lives, just like the seeing.
Or this life.
But mostly, for example, if we talk about the seeing and hearing now, it is the result of karma from previous lives.
Or this life too.
Okay. So the karma that brings result in this life is usually just the weaker...
That which has been done.
Just that which has been done. So we can't say the seeing or hearing is just the result of karma from past lives, maybe from this life too.
That's why there are different degrees of the vipaka, which is produced by karma, in this life or next life or other lives after the next life.
The one that is brought about in this life, is it the Dita Dharma, the Dhania Karma, the one that is the result of the first Jhavana Citta? This one.
Yeah.
So this is meant to be weaker karma, isn't it?
It can produce only in this life.
Only in this life.
But the other karma can produce in this life and future life.
Yeah.
So there's some of the karma we do in this life is the strong one and some is the weak one. But both can give result in this life. Is that right, Ajahn?
It depends on whether it's the first jhavana or the second to the
sixth. The second jhavana can give result future life, but also this life.
The first one is in this life, the last one is next life, and the rest for the lives to come.
Lives to come only.
Well, those middle ones, also this life, right? They can give result also in this life?
Only the first.
Only the first one, really?
Yeah.
Dita Dharma. Only the first one gives a result.
Just
in this
part
life.
Of seven. Oh. So the rest can produce straight. So
and those ones don't produce ever in this life. They only produce.
The second one?
Yeah, the second, third, fourth, fifth. Only for future life.
Right.
I didn't know that.
The first one is the weak.
Only the first one is giving result in this life.
And the last one,
and the
next life.
Okay.
According to the strength of the karma, the first and the last is weaker.
Okay.
And does this mean that the first, if it does not produce in this life, will never produce?
Never.
It is a function of the other moment.
No, what I'm thinking about is the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. You can do the... Something I found. Remember a long time ago I talked about red fish. There was a novice monk. He was ready to become an arahant, and red fish was very suitable for him for developing samatha. So he asked his preceptor, Sariputta, bring me some red fish, I'm going back to my room. And Sariputta didn't say anything, just went out and found some red fish on the alms round and brought it back to the novice monk. But in the meantime, the novice monk already attained arahantship. Anyway, I found that passage in the Dhammapada Tathagata. Someone was a little bit... They hadn't heard of that, they said, when I brought it up before. But I found the actual...
Have you heard Kunsuki? Mm.
I read Robert, I think, once before. But that.
It's a different equator. I can get it on a computer if you like. It's in the Dhammapada Atthakatha.
Yes, on the Dhamma Vidanya Karma, which only brings result in this life, and my friend said that when he didn't have much understanding of the teachings and was living quite heedlessly, it was only because he read about how karma could have result in this life that it actually deterred him from doing harm. So people find it quite important whether karma can bring result in this life. But of course this is just a kind of fear of the consequences. And just to clarify, this Dita Dhamma Vidanya Karma, it's not strong enough to cause birth, but it's strong enough to cause rupas such as eye sense or visible object. Is that correct?
What about Soraya? The karma of this life, or what life? He was born a man.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
and so that was the karma of this life, must have been. Mm-hmm. Right, that's a good idea. So even it can condition masculinity, femininity. I thought these were just the result of previous karma, but can be of karma in this life. And heart base also?
Anything that we can understand, as much as we can understand.
Any rupas. Okay, yeah. I thought it was just by way of supporting the results of other karma, but it can condition the
when it's strong karma. Strong enough to produce result in
this
like that.
Yeah, even though it's weaker karma, but it can bring a result.
So weak and strong, like what?
Of that degree.
It's the weakest karma in the sense that it's just the first jhāvana jīta. So it's the weakest karma that it can only bring a result in this life, not in other lives. But that weaker karma that can only bring a result in this life can still be strong enough that it can condition eye senses, masculinity, femininity, results like this.
Yeah, I found it. Pandita the Novice. If you find Dhammapada Atthakatha, there's a whole long story about Pandita the Novice. In past lives, apparently he liked fish, red fish, and so it was suitable for his body. And red fish in this life supported to make the body calm, developing samatha. And he asked Sariputta, "I need red fish." And Sariputta went out and found some for him. But in the meantime, he attained arahatship already. Anyway, my example was, because of that example, should we all start eating red fish? People take these examples. Someone was saying there's a monk who held up his hand and then he realized he didn't have sati sampajana, so he put it back and lifted his hand again.
And what about other monks or novices?
They didn't need red fish.
Who didn't like red fish?
Yeah. Well, exactly. That was my whole point. But I'm just saying there's examples like this.
What about ahara sapaya?
Yes, that is...
nutriment.
Right. That's what it is, obviously.
It's like the conchi example, so eating conchi.
But it doesn't depend on red fish.
Doesn't this prove the same point about how it's not a matter of the patana or the forest or the red fish?
Well, except that I would say that patana is part of hearing Dharma, so hearing Dharma is one condition for right understanding to grow.
No need, because he had attained arahata before having it.
Yeah, he didn't actually need the red fish in the end. When his mother was conceived, she had the wish, "Oh my, I give the best red fish to 500 monks, headed by Sariputta." Then she had the baby, and so on. I don't know if you want to look into it in detail.
And what's the moral of the teaching?
I guess it's not red fish is the best for us, no.
The variety of the accumulation of each one.
Yeah. The different conditions.
And that is actually the same answer to going to the forest or reading the patana. It's just different accumulations.
But it doesn't give the answer of the guy by the Ganges who's still alive holding up his hand, right? this is not the same element, because that holding up the hand for 32 years is just pure wrong view.
It doesn't matter as long as is there an understanding of reality right now, no matter in what position.
Maybe if you go talk Dharma to him, but he can't put his hand down anymore, it's still there.
Sure he can't, yeah.
I think, Rob, you would say that, obviously, if you're reading a Dhamma book, for example, even if you embarked on that with the wrong view, there'd still be a chance that by reading it, there'd be some understanding of Dhamma.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you feel about it?
Yeah, I just think there's a difference in activity. Some activities demonstrate severe wrong view. Some have got more chance of being on the right track, that's what I think. Some activities, like reading an Abhidhamma book.
How does it help to classify activities in that way? Isn't it more important to understand what wrong view and right view is?
Well, that's what the Abhidhamma tends to do. That's why I think in that way. But I see that people read Abhidhamma and don't get anywhere. So they need to be pointed out about the present moment and
reality.
Anyway, I thought it was interesting about the red fish. Don't you think so?
Not the blue? Only the red?
Red fish is apparently very good taste.
Clinging.
Well, the novice couldn't have been clinging, would he? Because
they must be clinging as long as it hasn't been eradicated yet.
But wasn't that the right thing for him to do?
For him?
Yes.
Or for who?
For him only.
It depends, see? Each one is different.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, my point to bring up that overall is that people see examples of monks in the old days living very ascetic lives in the jungle, say, and they think, right, I will copy that behaviour. And they see nothing wrong with it. They are surprised when we say, why not try to understand life as it is now? So I point out the example of the redfish and I say, that monk, redfish was one of the conditions for him to attain arahatship. But you wouldn't believe that you should eat redfish, right? And they say, of course not. That's obviously not some sort of behavior. So that's my point.
And it shows that having redfish or not, it doesn't matter because that monk had attained enlightenment.
Well, yeah. It loses its punchline a bit because by the time Sariputta got back, he was already an arahat. Yeah, it did destroy my punchline a bit, yeah. It's a pity about it.
Yeah,
if he just waited and had the first morsel and then became, it would have been much better.
I don't think that helps the case of, because people look at the fact that the Buddha and Sariputta attained all the jhana levels before enlightenment.
Yeah.
It doesn't help them to understand that by the same token, they don't need to attain jhana.
But the point is that if one follows any activity with an idea that it is the activity that will bring the result, that it is the activity that is the important factor in the development of understanding, whether it is studying Pali, reading Patana, going to the forest, that is the problem because it's not understanding at this moment.
That takes you away from understanding.
It takes you away, and that's why when one gets into arguments about the situation and this being the right or the wrong, it never gets anywhere because it's not understanding at the present moment. And it just depends on accumulations. Some people with understanding will go to the forest or stand on one leg or eat red fish. Others with understanding will study the Patana and Pali. So it's the understanding now, the seeing, the hearing now that's important.
What about not red fish but coffee?
Coffee? Is there an example in the Tipitaka? No.
Now?
Yeah, coffee works for me every time, I'm sure. Yeah, I know arahatship.
You don't need red fish.
Did I have it right about what I said, Ajahn?
Just bring me
red fish, yeah.
Okay, that's all. But it can be anything.
Kodji is another one featured a lot in the...
Right. As a suitable food.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of monks became enlightened after eating.
Right, yeah, yeah, they did.
Or not overeating, it's the same thing, just whatever is sabaya. Not overeating and becoming drowsy.
back on karma, and actually we had some discussion about killing, and last time we were talking about killing and how Sotapanna won't kill because there's no wrong view, there's no idea that one can take another's life. Anyway, there's an understanding of
no
karma.
Need.
No need.
Anyone has to die, no need to kill.
Everyone has to die. And also,
just be patient and wait.
And also one understands the result of death now is one's own deeds, not the deeds of another. So in that sense, one could say there's no killing anyway, because death comes about as a result of one's own...
No usefulness, no need to kill anyone, because all are dhammas, arisen from conditions.
So I'd like to just read out this small passage from the Brahmajala commentary.